This episode of Comic Dorks is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the perfect place to build a fantastic new website. Need to start a store? No problem. They have the tools for you. Need a responsive design to run on mobile? No problem there either. Squarespace.com is amazing. Get 20% off your account right now by using the code DORKS10 at checkout at Squarespace.com.
Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of
Comic Dorks.
Thrilling adventure, intense excitement, pounding action, and spine-tingling mystery.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Comic Dorks. This is Comic Dorks, the comic book podcast, because we wanna. So take that. It's episode 14 for October 24th, 2013. My name is Scott Johnson, and I'm joined, let's go around the table, by Steven Schleicher. Hello, Steven.
Hello.
Good to have you back. And Mr. Scott Kurtz, how's it going, man?
It's going great.
That's great. Talking to us from his house, which is great.
No, I'm at the office.
Oh, he's still at the office. All right. Well, that's good, too. Nothing wrong with the office. Mark's not here. He's he went to Missouri and came home with some misery.
Oh, no.
It's pretty good.
It was terrible.
Yeah, it was really bad.
I'm not saying, oh, no, at his misfortune. I'm saying, oh, no, at that unfortunate
thing I said, right?
Joe.
Sure. It was pretty bad. And he is pretty bad off, he says. So we'll miss him, but we will continue on. For John's been a while since our last episode. And so I'm excited to get right back into it. Before we get too far into stuff, though, let's talk about the news.
The stolen plans of the Vibrator were destroyed, along with the only two criminals who knew how to operate it.
All right. Let's talk about something that happened just today.
I don't think I've ever heard that. I don't think I've ever paid attention to that bumper before.
Is this your first time? Wow, really?
There's the vibrator's missing, and there's only two criminals that know how to operate it.
You're right.
You just hear women gasping.
Yeah.
Well, come on!
Yeah, there's a third. Come on now. So today, the Captain America 2, well, Captain America, the Winter Soldier trailer hit the web.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I noticed was Scott Kurtz singing its praises. I hadn't even seen it yet at that time. And I thought, well, that bodes well. And I hopped in, watched it, checked it out. Steven, you've seen it, clearly.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Scotty, where are you on this thing? Like, I know, let me just say the takeaway I got from your tweet this morning. And it was this. All the disappointment. And a trailer's hard to tell. We know that. We know a trailer can only be so much. And who knows, you know, the final film will be the big determiner. But you had already felt like what we lost with Man of Steel in terms of the tone of the character of Superman slash Clark Kent was that tone was not missing here. The tone that you should have for a Captain America film. You want to dig into that a little deeper and explain what you mean?
Well, basically one of the things that struck me watching the trailer is that Captain America is kind of Marvel's Superman, at least when it comes to his morality.
Yeah.
And it's like, just like we said before, you know, where the wanton destruction in Superman seemed almost caused by him and just he didn't seem to care at all. Whereas in the Avengers, all that wanton destruction, Captain America was trying to save people.
Right.
And it's like when Captain America is a better Superman than Superman, you know, something's wrong. And, you know, everything that, you know, what can you tell from a trailer? But the things they showed in just this trailer, which could be misleading, is more Superman than the entire Man of Steel movie.
Yeah. No, I got the same impression. There was more, I don't know, there was just a lot of, well, that's not right, kind of stuff coming out of him, which you expect from this guy who was, you know, a soldier in World War II, who perhaps approaches thing with a different set of ethics. Life is simpler for him then. And one of the, you know, some people complain about this character because of that. But I think there's been some pretty rich comic stories around that idea. So, Steven, do you feel like if they bring him to this new, you know, if this sequel is at least somewhat hinging on his struggle to maintain that sense of morality and kind of, quote unquote, do the right thing in the face of terrible odds, but that's a good move? And is that consistent with, you know, the Avengers and other stuff?
I think it's consistent with Captain America. I mean, again, here's a guy that's been frozen for, you know, however many years, 60 years, whatever it's been,
yeah.
who now has to face the America that he loves. That's not the America that he loves. Mm. It's like you go back to high school, the girl you had a crush on, she's not the same girl anymore.
No.
And that's kind of the way that this movie feels. Throw in a little bit of some Bourne identity type stuff with, you know, the politicians trying to control the situation. And I think that this is going to be a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
It looks like it's a, it looks like it's kind of a, well, let me say a couple things first. The great thing about the, first of all, the first Captain America movie was wonderful.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And it was great also because it was a World War II movie. And I've really enjoyed all of the Marvel films, even the ones that, you know, all of Phase 1 and most of Phase 2, even when it gets a little derivative. I mean, you know, it's hard not to like the Iron Man movies because Downey Jr. is so great, even when the plots aren't the best. But,
sure.
You know, that first Captain America movie was a winner. And then Cap and the Avengers was awesome. And to see them, what appears to be them building off of it again, where from the trailer you see that S.H.I.E.L.D. is rolling out like fleets of helicarriers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've got kind of the implication of surveillance. Or maybe, you know, in the trailer he says, I always thought the punishment came after the crime. And, you know, this isn't freedom, this is fear. These are things that we're dealing with now,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so to have Captain America, who is kind of a man out of time, be a lens which we focus our current events through, it's, I think it's going to be, I think it potentially could be really great. Mm. And then you also have this continuation of what we saw in the Avengers where, you know, part of the thing that Tony and Steve uncovered in the Avengers was that Phase 2 of the Tesseract was weaponizing it.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
So it looks like S.H.I.E.L.D. continued with that. The first thing that struck me about the trailer was this looks like it's going to be another awesome Cap movie. The second thing that struck me was he's more Superman than Superman. And the third thing that struck me was, this is what I want out of the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show that I am not getting.
So that's, I was going to get to that. So since our last episode, S.H.I.E.L.D. has come and had a few episodes poop out. And I'm embarrassed to say, I think it's, I have a few excuses, but I've not seen it yet. So I still don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what I'm missing. And that seems crazy. I realize given it's the sort of thing that I would usually watch on day one, but things have been so nuts. I just haven't. So I've heard everything from it's the best thing on TV, I'm so glad they're doing this, to, you know, tepid responses to what you just said. So prognosis, is that show going to make it? What's wrong with it? How come you don't like it?
Well, I mean, I don't need to be the only one talking.
So
I'll chime in.
Yeah,
no, right. I'll admit, too, I've only watched the first episode, and that's because I had about a 10-minute downtime that I could blow through it. And I thought it was interesting. It felt a little too forced at times. But overall, it felt good. Now, I'm saving up the rest because I want to binge view them, which I often do with shows. So I haven't watched anything past that first episode. You can look at the ratings, and even though S.H.I.E.L.D. continues to stay in the number three spot, the audience size continues to shrink as the season goes on. It has been given a green light for an entire season. I think it's going to probably get at least two seasons out of it, and maybe season two will be a little bit better as they try to get their freshman foothold.
Well, but, you got three, you know, this out of Heroes. You don't think they've at least got three or four in them?
Yeah, I think they've got at least two. I mean, when's the next Avengers movie come out? This is all going to, you know, eventually tie back in to get audiences geared up to go see the next Avengers movie. I mean, right. That's what it's there for.
Sure.
Are there good
stories? It'll make it to 2015. I mean, yeah. Disney will just pay for it.
Yeah.
It's worth that. It. I mean, it's worth it to them just to, yeah, to do that,
probably.
I think.
Probably. I've seen all of them.
Yeah.
The first episode was underwhelming. A couple of my criticisms of the show are that I have a couple theories. I can't decide why I like it, but I don't love it. And I've never been a huge fan of these CW superhero shows. Sure. So yeah. I never really liked Smallville, and I really don't care for Arrow. And it's like, look, either make a show about superheroes or don't. But don't make a show that dances around maybe, you know, like it's almost like, why make a show out of the most boring parts of being a superhero? And I don't know why everyone loved Smallville and why everyone loved, you know, that kind of stuff. But growing up, I watched TV shows where, if you think back on it now, there wasn't a lot of superhero in these superhero shows. I mean, $6 Million Man, I don't know how much of that was actually superheroes. Right. And Greatest American Hero, I love that show. But I don't know how – I still love it. I still love going back and watching it. The Wonder Woman show, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. How much of that was actually like what we get in the movies, which is now is amazing.
Yeah.
You would think that they'd have more of a budget. It feels a little cheap.
And that's kind of what I got from the first episode was
this is
your budget.
Yeah, it feels a little cheap. The other problem with it is that, and this is where I'm saying I'm willing to give a show time, because no one gives shows time anymore. Mm-hmm. I think Enterprise, which was the last Trek TV show we got canceled right when it found its footing.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
The people were allowed, if they had been given more time, I mean, they had already made their mistakes and kind of found where the fuck that show should have gone, and it was just starting to get good, and then it's done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look at Deep Space Nine. It really didn't take off until the Dominion War started. Next Gen was terrible. The first, I mean, I'm pulling all these Star Trek things out, but I mean, there's a lot of series that just didn't get, if given some time, find their footing.
Sure.
I think S.H.I.E.L.D. could absolutely find its footing.
Mm.
But here are a couple concerns. Concern number one, Agent Coulson may not be a leading character.
Mm.
He may not. The coolness of Agent Coulson might be that he's a sub part of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like he shows up and says, "Is this one of Stark's?" And he says, "I don't know. Stark never talks to me." And then he walks up and he's like, "You're an unauthorized armor." And then that's the only time you see him in the movie, and it's love. You love him.
Right.
Did you ever watch that funny thing happen on the way to Thor's Hammer or whatever that short was where he stops in at the convenience store?
Yeah.
That was a real brilliant piece of work there, and he pulled it off with just himself in there.
But it's small doses, though.
Maybe that's what it needs to be, is small doses.
It is, but I think that probably what needs to happen is the show needs to go through its heartaches a little bit. It's kind of like the newsroom. I mean, Newsroom season 2 was killer compared to Newsroom season 1, and I loved season 1.
Yeah.
But I mean, season 2, they took that feedback and they ratcheted up a notch, and it was just polished.
Yeah.
Well, season 2 of S.H.I.E.L.D. might be super polished. You know, I kind of feel about S.H.I.E.L.D. the way I felt about Dollhouse.
Oh, yeah. Dollhouse, given enough time. There were times near the end of that run, which was super short, but near the end, you were like, yeah, okay, I'm kind of seeing where you could go with this. Yeah.
The only other criticism I have is that everyone they cast for that is straight out of central casting, the same fucking description.
Yeah.
You know, like, this agent is a good-looking young person,
right?
Male. This agent is a good-looking young person, male, and has a Scottish accent. This person is a young, good-looking female, and then the other character is a good, young-looking female with a British accent.
Yeah.
You know, and they're so interchangeable, whereas if you watched other Whedon shows like Buffy, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, Sarah Michelle Gellar is a good-looking girl, but she's not straight out of central casting.
No, she's she had a really unique look, and everybody in Firefly kind of felt that way too to me.
Same thing, exactly. I mean, the best casting on S.H.I.E.L.D. is Ming-Na.
Mm.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's the best part of the show. And she's already been given a nickname, and it's really, really awesome. Now, the other stuff they're working on seems so kind of... The ongoing story right now is like they tied it all into they're trying too hard to tie it into the Marvel universe. So
that's what I kind of bothered me about the first episode. It's like, okay, this is Extremis, and it's the missing elements from when the invasion happened, and then this Tony Stark thing, and it's just like, okay, in you know the span of 30 seconds, we're referencing everything that's happened in all the Marvel movies before, and that seemed very forced and problematic. Yeah.
Well, right now the big ongoing story is that there's a group called Centipede that's trying to stabilize Extremis.
Wow, and they're going to do
okay.
It.
Okay, yeah. I mean, why not?
Why not get a group called AIM to go in there and try to stabilize Extremis?
That's the weird thing. And another thing that's happening is I'm wondering if it's tied up in rights. Because in the latest episode, it starts off in China, and there's a street performer. He's a magician. He's doing magic, and everyone's kind of like, okay. He's like, no, but look at this. And they go, okay. And then he goes, all right, look at this. And he just fires, just appears in his hand. And he throws a fireball, and everyone goes, whoa. And he's like, yeah, that is magic. Now you've really seen magic. And so this lady in the flower dress comes out and says, you have a gift, and I can teach you how to use it. Well, he's like, she's like, well, how did this happen? He goes, I don't know. It just developed. This power just developed. Okay, well, I'm a Marvel zombie. He must be a mutant, right?
Yeah.
No, he's not a mutant. They had to say, it must be from the radiation from the reactor. Legally,
that's got to be rights. It has to be rights.
It is. They're Disney Marvel parent, you know, the Marvel Paramount Phase 1, Phase 2 that got bought by Disney are not allowed to use mutants. Fox has TV and movie rights to mutants.
Yeah. Wow. So they can't even reference it. That's crazy.
No, they can't even say mutant.
Mm.
And if they do anything like that, even like anyone that gets a superpower because they were born with it, that's a mutant.
Yeah. No, you're right. That stuff's a little disjointed to me. I mean, I haven't seen it, so who knows? But the worry I have is the worry that everybody, well, you kind of echoed some of it, but my worry is that I don't want them dancing around, ooh, origin stories all day long. I hate that. I want to see, the reason the Avengers was fun is because we were now done with origin stories. Everybody in that movie had their origin story told twice in some cases, in recent years, the Hulk specifically. And now it was time to start kicking A. There's a big threat. Let's all get together. Now it's, you know, an origin story of the team as a team, but for the most part, you can get to business. These shows, Heroes did it. This sounds like it's doing it. Others have done this. All the WB stuff you mentioned did it the entire lifespan of their existence, including Arrow now. They just dance around this origin so long and drag it out as if there's real tension in the air every time you go to commercial about, ooh, guys got powers. That only lasts so long for me. I need to get past that and start kicking A and have the complex story come from interactions with villains, with complex characters, with cops in the middle, whatever you got to do to take it out of origin time. Cause I can't stand the origin stories. I mean, they're fine for what they are and when they happen. But if you have an entire season where they drag out 15 origin stories until you get to episode 24, what are you doing with your life?
Well, I don't know if they're doing origin stories because I mean, they introduced the team and the team is starting to learn how to work together. I don't know if I'm that interested in the team yet the same way I've been interested in other characters in the Whedonverse. But what they have done is replaced a Monster of the Week format with a S.H.I.E.L.D. has to investigate some kind of incident or unexplained technology or a person with a superpower, you know.
So one it's of like the political episodes, political intrigue meets X-Files, right?
Sure.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, and like I'm saying, the format works, right? We see it in X-Files. You've seen it in any cop procedural. It could essentially be like Marvel's S.H.I.E.L.D.-flavored powers, right? Like S.H.I.E.L.D. investigates superpowered crimes. But it's just kind of this weird line where, like, as an audience, we're ready. Like, we're ready to accept, okay, there's people in the world with superpowers, and, you know, there's Thor and Captain America and the Hulk and Iron Man, and people have superpowers now, and everything's different. Okay, but they're sitting there debating in an episode whether ESP is real. And it's like...
It's You've got like, a whole franchise over there that has some people with...
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, it's of course it is. There's superheroes everywhere. Of course ESP is real.
Yeah.
Well, no, it hasn't been established yet. The Marvel Universe, movieverse, is very much, it's the regular world, except Thor showed up and changed everything, and Iron Man built technology, and the Hulk happened. Well, that's science. And Captain America is science, and Iron Man's science.
Yeah, you know, the fact that Disney doesn't plunk down another $6 billion and buy back the Fantastic Four and the X-Men and Spider-Man really could potentially hurt the expansion of the universe unless they get their act together and get some agreements in place, because, man, let's stop over and see Reed Richards and clear some air on some of this stuff.
Well, do you think that price seems too low to me? I'll bet they're up against a much higher asking price to break contracts, don't you think?
I'm sure the price is much higher for each franchise. Fantastic Four probably could have been bought up for a song a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Now with the reboot and the people on board with that, I think it's going to be much higher to go in and get it. Spider-Man, before The Amazing Spider-Man took off, they probably could have gone in and snagged that up. Daredevil is back over at Marvel Disney now.
Yep.
X-Men has still been going strong. That's the only franchise that they have a tough time, and I think they really need to negotiate and say, can we share this? Can we pay you, $100,000 to use this? Yeah, sure. The X-Men.
X-Men won't be back in play until Hugh Jackman's done.
Yeah.
Because as long as Hugh Jackman is willing to be Wolverine, everyone's going to still go see those movies.
Yeah. Although the last one didn't do very well. I mean, whatever. It's all relative, but box office receipts were not awesome for Wolverine or The Wolverine or whatever the hell. Was it? Was that what it was called? Yeah, just The Wolverine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was okay.
I liked it. I thought it was fine as a film, but it didn't do all that great. But the bigger, it must be ironic because as a just a film viewer, there got to be people out there who go, well, this guy playing Captain America, he played Johnny Storm. How come that's going? Why is that happening?
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a twisted thing, these rights and how it's managed. And now it's affecting a show that can't even say the word mutant. And they have to argue.
I don't think it matters. I mean, whether or not Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ever becomes a great show, I think has more to do with the writing than rights or anything else. And I think that Marvel, and I don't think Disney ever has to spend a dime. Because one of the great things about what they're doing with these movies is they're saying, we don't need Spider-Man. We don't need the X-Men. Let Fox keep it. Because you know what? We're going to make an Ant-Man movie, and now everyone's going to give a shit about Ant-Man. Because here's the secret that everyone forgetting.
Yeah.
Here's the secret that everyone's forgetting. Iron Man is now said in the same level of importance and pantheon-ness of superheroes mm-hmm. as Spider-Man and the Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for the longest time, Iron Man was a Daredevil level second tier hero.
Totally B level, yep.
It wasn't until Downey Jr. stepped in that anyone gave a shit about Iron Man. Yep. They totally turned him into, in the superhero world, an A-lister.
Yeah, he can toe-to-toe with Batman in terms of public consciousness.
He's definitely now.
Yeah.
Batman, as far as the movies are concerned, Batman's been around and popular longer. But so that's why it's really interesting to see them go, okay, Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Thor, the Hulk, Captain America, the Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. What? Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay.
All right.
Thor 2, Captain America 2. Yeah. Ant-Man. Yeah. What? Ant-Man. Because, I mean, they're exciting the heck out of me with that, because if they can put the same level of quality into those movies, they can make. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy is essentially Space Avengers.
Right.
Yeah. So go have fun. And Ant-Man could be really, really fun. Doctor Strange, Black Panther, go nuts. Like, I would love it. There's all kinds of second-tier heroes they could make awesome.
Do you get excited? Are you excited to get to see the Falcon in this trailer, by the way?
Oh my God.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, some of the first comics I ever read were my dad brought me home Captain America comics when I was sick one time. And so I got that. Kirby came back to Marvel in the late 70s and did that Cap run when it was Cap and the Falcon.
Yeah.
And that's just awesome.
Yeah. That got me really excited.
It'd be nice for him to have a friend. I mean, I know they're setting this up with this him and the Scarlet Witch, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Having a friend. I like the way you put that. I'm a big fan of the Falcon, so this is all good news to me. Last time I saw him was in one of those direct-to-DVD Marvel things that wasn't very good, and I just thought, man, that guy needs more love than this.
I'm a little worried about Thor.
Why is that?
Don't worry about this.
Oh, the next Thor movie.
Yeah.
Well, somebody on online today said, "What's the deal with these movies not having these sequels not having a clear arch enemy villain type in the movie. And I, you know, I tried to explain Winter Soldier stuff and all that to him, but I don't honestly know who's the bad guy in Thor 2. I mean, I don't, I,
It's Malekith. Yeah.
Is that going to be enough to make everybody go, holy shit, it's, he's the best bad guy? I mean, are we going to get excited about that? Or is that, it feels so
third. I like the first Thor and the first Thor, the bad guy were the Frost Giants, or I guess, and Loki.
That's a good point.
And that big walking piece of iron.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Thor's not famous. Well, the deal of Thor is it's always going to dig up something most people haven't heard of. That's just the way that's going to be.
Thor is definitely going to always be some kind of mythology. I mean, there is a big bad in Thor besides Loki. I mean, they do have the goddess of death. They have Hela. I mean, they have Ragnarok is a thing that happened during Simonson's era where the end of the world was coming and Odin had to fight Surtur. Mm-hmm. And they could do that eventually. No, the thing that concerns me is that I know that they at one point they dropped in Joss to just completely rewrite a couple scenes that were they just couldn't figure out. And the director of the movie was like really grateful that Joss dropped in and rewrote a bunch of stuff. And then there are two end credit scenes for Thor. One is mid credits and the other one's a capper at the end. And the director of Thor has already come out to say that he's happy not to take credit for the middle post-credit teaser.
Oh, weird.
And the guy in the interview is like, what do you mean you're not happy with it? He goes, it's not that I don't like it. It's just that it's from Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's not the same tone. It just doesn't fit.
Mm, yeah.
And he's like, oh, this is James Gunn. He goes, I wouldn't blame James for it. I'd blame the studio for it. They obviously want to tie in the next movie, but... It just doesn't fit, and I'm happy to not take credit for that.
Hmm. Well, I'm with him that it doesn't. The two have never really fit in my mind. They're two very different approaches, don't you think? Super teams. I know it's all in the same universe and stuff, but there's one's got a raccoon, dude. One has a talking raccoon. So there's your separation.
If the storylines connect, right? Yeah. I mean, like Thor ended with the. Or wait a minute. What was it? Yeah, Thor. Did Thor end with the Tesseract?
Yes. The final scene in the hallway, and Loki's still kind of creeping around, invisible or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What was the cut? What was the end scene for Captain America then?
That was him waking up in the city.
Yeah,
and talking to somebody. Was it Black Widow?
Right.
No. To Samuel L. Jackson.
That's right.
Is that what
that's
it was? Yeah, because he hadn't. Because he had crashed and things had ended, and then here he is in New York, and it's 2012 or whatever.
Right.
That's my memory of it anyway. It's interesting. It's really interesting. Like this. Good, imagine, just go back, you guys, to your like 12-year-old comic book reading self and say, one day, millions will be spent and billions will be made tying all this stuff together the way your books do now. They're going to have these weird teasers that connect them, and you're going to have one franchise launch from another. And oh, by the way, Iron Man is going to be a huge freaking deal. And all this all would have seemed like fantasy to me. I wouldn't have believed that weird looking dude telling me this that came from the future. There's no way I would have bought it because this is crazy. The extent of what we had from Marvel, especially back then, was so pitiful and lame that I had just sort of said as a kid, well, I guess this will just be comic books. I'm never going to get cool movies out of this stuff.
God, Downey changed everything. If you go back and watch the first Raimi Spider-Man, it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. It's silly.
That first Raimi Spider-Man seems as campy as 66 Batman now.
Mm-hmm. I kind of agree. I don't like it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I love that movie.
I like two. I don't like one. And I didn't like one at the time even, but I like two a lot.
I tell you what movie for some reason still holds up for me as enjoyable is that first Bryan Singer X-Men.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I think it's really good. I think two is really good too, but I think one's got some problems. I don't like the saber-tooth bits and stuff like that, but it's, I don't know. There's some strength in that. There's tone in there that's cool. I mean, it's all the reasons we were excited about Singer's take on Superman, which in retrospect.
Different Singer, buddy.
No, that's Bryan Singer, wasn't it?
Yeah, but yeah. Superman Zack's not. Oh, right. Bryan Singer did
Returns.
Superman Returns.
Yeah, Returns. Oh, yeah.
Returns, yeah.
And Returns. You know, if for all the complaining about what they got wrong, there's some, I'm not sure. I think we may have been a little harsh back then. I don't mean us, but to people generally. You don't think so?
No.
Really, you think it's as bad as everyone said it was?
Superman's a deadbeat dad that stalks his ex-girlfriend.
I did hate that line.
And then expects Cyclops to save him from the water.
It's not a.
You're right. That stuff sucked. But they got the character. They got the tone of the character better than Man of Steel did.
I think they got Lex Luthor done really well as the revenge-driven capitalist. Yeah, that's what that movie got right.
But he was still Gene Hackman.
To an extent, yes.
It was even the same plot.
Miss Tessmacher, anytime you got to yell that in your movie.
That movie made... His plot made no sense.
Real estate.
Okay, real estate. All right, I gotcha.
All right,
I'm going to make this giant island, right? Yeah. It's going to wreck the East Coast, okay? Yeah, yeah. But then I've got all this land that everyone's going to want. Okay, what? So it's like a lush island? Oh, no. It's desolate carbon. It can support no life.
Yeah, that was
stupid. It's going to go for top dollar.
All right, I'll boil it down to what I think was good and that we've forgotten about, and it's when he saved all those people on that plane that fell apart in the sky. That was great.
Well, yeah, and you know why that was great? Because it was a almost word-for-word lifting of a scene of the plane scene from
the Donner movie.
Yes.
Well,
and then the animated series did it too.
Sure.
It actually went as far as to say, have him say the line, I hope this doesn't put you off from flying. Statistically speaking, it's the safest way to travel. And then she faints.
I'm sorry, but it would have put me off flying. Anyway, let me pop in here real quick and tell you guys about a fantastic sponsor. That sponsor is Squarespace.com. I know we have plenty of listeners who probably are artists or they're writers or otherwise, maybe you're just a fan of comic books, for example, and you want to build the ultimate repository for comic book fandom and you want to do it online. Well, that makes sense, right? You're going to go register a domain. You're going to build a sweet site. But then you're like, well, I don't build sites and I don't know how and I don't want to hire a dude to do it. So what are my options? Well, as far as I'm concerned, you have one option. That is to go to squarespace.com. They give you the tools to build it visually, quickly, and easily. And their ever-evolving tools are always getting simpler, easier, and more powerful. My favorite thing about Squarespace is that it's not some dumbed-down GeoCities 90s kind of garbage going on. They adhere to real web standards. They make it possible for you to set up stores quickly and easily, sell what you want, do what you want, how you want it. I love responsive design. That's built right in. So you can build a site that will look great immediately on a desktop or on a phone or a tablet without even having to think about it. It's a piece of freaking cake. And I also like them because you can go there and start a free trial. And that trial means no credit card needed. You don't have to enter it even temporarily. You just start using it. Start using some of those tools. Build a site. See what you think. If you decide to keep going, here's the best part of my entire message right now. You can save yourself 20% off any package. All you have to do is use the code DORKS10 at checkout. That'll save you 20% off right now at squarespace.com. We thank them for their support of Comic Dorks. Well, there you go. The Captain America trailer looks awesome. I'm stoked. It looks like it will just continue this trend of great Marvel movies, and we can all enjoy the hell out of it when it comes out. And that's when next spring, right?
Captain America, next spring, next year somewhere.
Not this winter.
Yeah.
In other news, Mark Waid says on comics, digital, and print, I was wrong. Interesting. He says, as the vast majority of publishers and retailers turned on me for preaching heresy and descended upon me like a fat kid on a chocolate cake, I maintained that the old ways were doomed to die more quickly than we could imagine and that the future of comics medium hinged on digital distribution. In all honesty, the old ways weren't doomed, he went on to sort of explain himself. I thought this was a really interesting article, and it made me think of you, Scott, because this is a big, you know, this is a conversation all the time that you've been having for years. Even if you follow Scott a little bit, you've heard him talk here or there or tweet or blog or whatever about the state of publishing and, you know, distribution, digital versus print, blah, blah, blah. What do you think about Mark's turnaround? Not turnaround, because it's not a total turnaround, but he's basically just saying, you know, calling it all doomed was probably a little hyperbolic, maybe.
I think his problem was he said the end is next week instead of the end is a decade from now.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me because I think it's safe to say I'm friends with Mark. I'm good acquaintances with Mark, and sure. We've discussed this a lot. And I've never, I guess I've not seen so much Mark say, well, Prince dead. I've heard him say many times, guys, just because I'm pro digital and just because I say, I think it's dumb to try to stop, he's against DRM. Mm-hmm. He thinks it's dumb to fight piracy. Just because he said that doesn't mean that he's saying that your comic book shop is stupid and the fact that you love buying real comics is stupid. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen him say, guys, just because I'm pro-digital, just because I'm anti-DRM, doesn't mean I'm against comics or floppies. I write Daredevil, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's just, I haven't talked to him about it, but it kind of feels to me like, because he recently bought a comic book shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that he didn't buy that comic book shop for the reasons he stated, but it almost feels like Mark just wants everyone to leave him alone, or maybe the message that he wants to get out is getting lost in the fact that the internet can't handle complex opinions.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, yeah. Either for comics or against it, and I guess he's against it.
Yeah.
He was on the Major Spoilers podcast after he made that big comment at, was it Baltimore, a few years ago. And we talked for an hour about his views on digital comics and where he thought the industry is going. And it's really great, and people really need to listen to it instead of taking out a sentence where he says that, you know, comics are, you know, print is, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you really have to examine the whole subject. For years was in that same boat where I would say, hey, paper is dead, print is dead, man. We need to get on board this internet thing. And print is still around. It's not the same form as it was 20 years ago, right? The newspapers are trying to adjust and still trying to cope and trying to figure out where they fit in all of this. And I think the comic industry is that way too. The nice thing is with the comic industry is that it's got this a dedicated fan base of people who want to read every single week and have gotten into the habit of reading every single week or month or whenever they're reading their title. So they've gotten in that habit over the years to go to the comic book shop, and that's where they buy stuff. Newspapers, on the other hand, yes, you have a subscription base, but it's still, today I don't need to go buy the New York Times, or, oh, let me buy the Post today, or, oh, let me go buy the High Plains Journal, or whatever that may be. And you may not be as a dedicated person to getting your news, especially when so much is going online, and so you're conditioned to move online for your latest, greatest news. We saw a lot of that happen in 2001 with the World Trade Center attack and people needing to go online to find their information faster than they could get it from television and from print. Yeah. And we haven't had that kind of a moment where people are rushing out to pick up the latest edition via Comixology. To cause people to change their method of thinking or their method of acquisition.
Sure. That was a pre-Facebook, pre-Twitter, kind of social media era anyway, which...
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so I don't think comics is print are going to go away. I think we have the potential to attract a lot more readers by attaching ourselves to those people who are our social media and internet friendly or electronic media friendly.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. He basically says at the bottom of this, he says, no one can deny there's a sustained boom going on right now and no hint of an oncoming bust. And he means that of print. He says, this is what's also really cool. The same thing is happening with digital comics. They're not only matching print's growth, they are exceeding it. So essentially, he's just saying, look, you guys, this idea, and the internet wants to take it as binary, either you're for or you're against. But it's basically just saying, look, it's this is here, and we can pretend all day that it's not, and you're just going to get left behind. So I don't feel like he's even changed his message, really. I feel like all
no,
he's
I don't
really
think
done
so
is,
either.
Yeah, I feel like all he's done I is think say, he's, he's I just think adjusted he's
a, it. I think he's just saying what he needs to so he can get some shit done. I mean, so I was there at the Harvey Awards when he gave his keynote speech. I was emceeing that night. And his keynote speech was, guys, we got to stop being afraid of piracy because if someone takes your comic and scans it and gives it to 50 people, That's not bad. I know you think it's bad, but it's not. And Sergio Aragonés like accosted him on the way back to his table.
Wow.
And just started screaming at him. It was like, you're wrecking everything. That's destroying the industry and we should be paid for our work. And Mark just left. Like he literally just rage quit the Harveys over it. And I don't blame him.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a great story where when I was in college, I had the opportunity, a friend of mine in the music department snuck me into Harry Connick Jr. came to talk to the music department. And so any music student could go in and see him. I was a big fan, so my friend brought me in. And one of the questions that was asked was, is it true you hate the Beatles? And he said, no. What happened was someone at an interview asked him if he hated John Lennon or something because of long hair. And it just became this thing where the guy wouldn't stop asking him. He's like, yeah, I fucking hate the Beatles, okay? I hate the fucking Beatles, all right? And like, yes, if I admit it, then and we can be done with this and move on, then yes, I hate the Beatles. And the guy's like, all right, you heard him, everybody. He hates the Beatles.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where Mark had to buy a comic book shop and say, I guess Prince not dead, so he can get on with the business of working on Thrill Bent and doing this stuff. But I don't know, guys. I got to tell you, the comic industry didn't die. It stabilized itself. But compared to other media, it's not very impressive.
Oh, no.
At all.
No, you're right.
I mean, you look at the top 300 chart and you look at estimated number of sales and you're looking at maybe 200,000, maybe that yeah. much. And
these
then it quickly
are, these
drops
are tiny
off
numbers
there.
Compared to all the other stuff they got their hands in.
Really, yeah. really tiny numbers.
Yeah. Which is
no
really,
one,
yeah.
No one is making, there's, I guarantee you that there's nobody working without some kind of exclusive contract with one of the big two. That's doing independent floppies. Like none of the people doing independent floppy stuff with Oni or Image, you know, save Robert Kirkman, you know, no one just doing these kind of independent comics is doing half as well as any of the mid-size level web comics. The end.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I don't know.
It's not so much doom and gloom. It's just it's a weird state of things because it can be a kind of a boutique business and thrive and do okay within whatever sphere it wants to be. Everybody wants it to be bigger, but maybe it doesn't need to be. Maybe it can just be this thing that sustains itself and is okay. The problem is it's just such a disparity. The same properties that we should be reading and enjoying are making, you know, billions worldwide in ticket sales for films and animation and other stuff. And yet the stuff that spawned it, the things that encourage it, the storylines that it's taken from, that the medium from which it was spawned can't catch a freaking break. I think it's the weirdest thing. I can't think of another business that's like
this. It's just the culture. It's just the culture. Mm-hmm.
But books aren't even like this. Like you could go out and buy, I don't know, one of the Hunger Games books, and you're going to be one of millions who bought it, and that thing made so much money it's ridiculous. And guess what? The movies are going to be big, huge moneymakers too. But nobody's scoffing at the money or the book money.
It's the stigma of comic books and comic book readers.
You think that's still a big...
Yes. Oh, yes. Right. Believe me.
It really is. Look, I mean, if someone did a story on, I don't know, a book fair, it would be about the books or it would be about the industry.
Yes.
If there's a story on the comic convention, it's look at all these kids in their costumes.
Look at all these guys and what they're doing.
Like, well, Comic-Con's in town again. And
here
oh boy,
we go again.
The convention center is just, you know. And you know what? That's because people that go to book fairs don't dress up as the Hunger Games. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we bring it on ourselves.
Sure.
We like...
Harry Potter launches be damned. Generally, you're right. That's not like a big deal. You know?
No, and the reason why no one says that about PAX or E3 or any of the video game things is because Grand Theft Auto makes $1 billion the first week.
There was a there was a really great line in that Dear Mr. Watterson movie, which I finally saw last week.
Oh, I haven't watched it.
It's really good. I liked it.
Is it out?
Yeah, it's out. Well,
I thought it wasn't supposed to be out until next week.
I got a copy of it from a backer who let me borrow it. And that, I think that, so that's why I think I had sort of early access on it. But I watched his Blu-ray version and it had signatures on the disc. So I'm sure that was one of those backer rewards. But And it was really cool of him to do that. So big thanks to him again. But it's really interesting, first of all. Second of all, there was a rumor that Watterson had a phone interview for that movie, and it wasn't in there. So I don't think that rumor.
No, the phone interview is with my friend Dave Kellett's movie.
That's with Kellett's movie? Oh, yeah. That's great, dude. When's that done? Are we close on that? Close on
that. I guess so, yeah.
Well, anyway, it was really good, very interesting look at. And it really celebrated why Calvin and Hobbes is a big deal. And it celebrated the beginning and the end of that kind of era for comics and what he did to the Sunday funnies and why he got out. And I thought it was really interesting, even handed and stuff. But there was this great quote from somebody who ran a comics museum back in somewhere. I forgot the name of it. You'd probably know it. But
Is it Jenny? Billy Ireland Museum?
Might have been. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Steve Hammaker's wife.
Yeah, yeah, that's her. She's in this. That's right. He even told me she was in this. I forgot all about it. Well, anyway, there was a great quote in there. I forgot my original point. There's a great quote in there from her about the differences between like literature and books, art on a wall, like artist paintings and drawings and things. And then why, for some reason, when you take those two, when these two high arts are crossed and you create some sort of hybrid, which comic books are kind of a hybrid of those two things, maybe the third, well, I guess storytelling from the books or whatever is your second thing. But the point is, when you cross those, some reason people shut down and call it low art. And it was mm-hmm. really, the way she talked about it probably needs to be heard because I'm doing a lousy job here. But yeah, in America, good point. Good point. But it was really... That really hit me. I was like, oh man, she's so freaking right about that. And why do we do this? Mm-hmm. I mean, so many of us know, and some of us just, you know, we tie our wagon to it because we just want to rebel. But I know that what I'm reading is amazing when I read something amazing and see amazing in a comic.
It's just cultural. Did you see, I linked yesterday to a documentary on Tezuka?
No.
The guy that invented Astro Boy and all that stuff?
No.
No, I haven't seen that, no.
I'm not super familiar with his manga. I watched Astro Boy growing up, and I watched Kimba the White Lion growing up. So, I've seen his stuff. But he is Osamu Tezuka is known as the god of manga, and he invented big eyes in anime.
Oh, great.
Okay,
he invented it then.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's very innocent beginnings. It's because he was a fan of Walt Disney Studios animation, and they had those big doe eyes on Snow White and stuff and the dwarves. And so he wanted to incorporate that. But in Japan, they produce. So, for example, like, all right, so you have a cartoonist here like Charles Schulz, all right, or Jim Davis. Don't use Jim Davis because Jim Davis actually uses Japanese. I'll use him for an example later on. But Charles Schulz, okay, well, Charles Schulz, he's the only guy making peanuts. You know that he sits down and from beginning, middle to end, it's him. He made it. Well, in Japan, when you have someone like Tezuka, he's the guy that his name is on it, but it's him and a team of 30 people, okay? So he writes it and he sketches it and maybe he inks the main characters. And then he's got a team of people that do the rest. And the reason why is because he's got to put out 15 pages a week. Each one of those guys is putting out 15 pages a week because where once a month or once every quarter, I think it's like multiples of five or something they're saying, they don't put out floppies. They put out volumes.
Yeah.
So he has an apartment. And keep in mind, he's in his 50s now, right, at this point of the documentary. He has an apartment in the city where he works. Then he has a home, a really beautiful home, where he spends 60 days out of the year because he's working the rest of the time.
Jeez.
He got stomach cancer and died 4 years after the documentary was made. His final words, which are well documented, are, "I beg of you, let me work," because the nurse took away his pens because he needed to rest and all he wanted to do was keep working.
Wow.
It's just a different... But in America, if you would say, when you say, well, he doesn't even draw it, he just, you know, art directs it, everyone turns their nose up. Mm-hmm. But like in Japan, that's just how it's done.
Right.
And I don't know how culturally we got to the opinions that we have about the creation and production of content. But I don't think anyone understands what goes into making it.
Right.
And the disproportionate balance of what goes into making it versus how quickly it's consumed.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know how to combat it or change it, but the comic book industry in America is, I don't care what Mark Waid says, maybe it's not going to die, but it's still sick as shit compared to other countries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me ask you a question tying back into our discussion about the Captain America movie. You said that a lot of our mid-tier comics creators are not doing any better than our webcomic creators, or doing just as good as the webcomic creators. Are we going to see, or how long before we see a series like PvP or Penny Arcade or any of these become a big deal Hollywood motion picture? When is that line going to be jumped?
Well, the problem is that I don't think people understand the truth of a movie being made. Just being made, not even being good, just sure. being made, is a crapshoot. I mean, it's a miracle any movie gets made at all.
Yeah.
Let alone that it's a good movie, and then on top of that, that the movie's a hit, or is marketed, maybe it's a great movie, it's marketed shitty like Scott Pilgrim was.
Yeah.
I think that there are kind of mid-level, well, let me give you a perfect example. We went to San Diego 2 years ago, and my friend Mary Cagle's there. She's the colorist on Table Titans, and she used to intern for me. We're walking outside San Diego, and there's a big inflatable Finn from Adventure Time. Mm-hmm. And I know Pendleton, and he's a great guy, and we play video games together. And so I looked up, and I'm like, that's weird. Like, that's – I know Pendleton. You know, like, that's his guy. And Mary said, maybe one day that'll be a big, giant inflatable skull. And I said, oh, God, don't say that. That makes – just the idea of that makes my stomach hurt. And she said, why? And I go, well, for that to have happened, the nature of what I do just changed 180 degrees. And I don't know that that's what I want right now. So, I mean, this concept of, well, I had this comic book and I sold the rights and now it's a movie and I'm rich, just is not real. Now, the concept of I worked on Adventure Time and it was great, and then Cartoon Network asked me to write on a bunch of series, and then I moved up to produce this, and now I'm writing here. Well, now you're... Now I'm in a completely different industry.
Yeah, it's also
Now I'm working my way up in a completely different industry. You know, now I'm trying to work towards being a showrunner or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I just don't think that's possible. But what I was saying is that, I mean, I don't know, but I can't imagine that the guy that is writing or drawing the Six Gun is making as much money as Zach Wienersmith from Sunday Morning Breakfast Cereal,
mm-hmm.
which is a webcomic. I mean, I kind of know from my discussions with Zach at conventions what size his business is, and I can gauge. I mean, a lot of these creators that work in traditional comics, they don't even understand the concept of putting advertising on their websites. I can't tell you how many people we talk to that are like, hey, can you help me get ads on my site? Can you help me, you know, sell things online? Like, we're not educating. I mean, I don't know if we should. I guess there's always been the argument from other people in webcomics that me and Brad and Dave and Chris trying to educate people on how to make money in webcomics is wrecking it for everyone else. Because why build your own competitors? But I've just never seen it that way. But
Ryan.
I guess the rising tide raises all ships. What's that phrase?
Yes.
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 But
exactly right.
Is it? I nailed it.
I think
great.
You nailed it.
But it's, you know, there's just when you see the level of God, there's so many problems. I could talk about it for hours. There's problems on the creative side. There's problem on the audience side. Yeah. The audience has no idea what the fuck goes into it. A lot of the creators are fucking babies and don't want to put in the work.
Mm-hmm.
Or they do want to put in the work, but they're just not talented enough. You know, I mean, it's super rare that you find someone who's talented enough and is willing to put in the work.
Yeah.
But you look at Europe and you look at Spain and you look at France and you look at Japan, and it just seems that they have a disproportionate number of people who are either, like, they figured it out. Like, they are talented and they're putting in the work and they, you know.
And they become national, in Japan especially, those guys become national heroes. Like,
even in Europe, you look at Herge and
it's a French guy.
Herge.
There's another French dude. I can't think of it right now.
Peo.
Maybe.
Peo made the Smurfs.
They love those guys over there.
Yeah, it's called the Ninth Art there.
Yeah. Here we go, oh, Walt Disney. Yeah, he made an empire.
There are people who are beloved here. There's Walt Disney. There's Charles Schulz. There's Jim Davis to an extent. Sure. And then Bill Watterson, Berkeley Breathitt. I mean, there are people who transcend it. But there's also a lot of animosity. I mean, think about this. You have Tetsuka, who is known as the god of manga in Japan. People line up just to buy his books, and he's not even there. You think there's any internet guy going on there giving him shit the way people give Stan Lee shit for not dying? And yes, that's the only reason you're pissed off at Stan Lee, because the fucker hasn't died yet. Because I guarantee you, if he had died and Jack Kirby was around, you'd be bitching that Stan wasn't getting credit. Yeah. You fucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
This old man didn't die and you're mad at him. Oh, Stan Lee's narrating the I saw some fucking blogger, one of these fucks, talking about how the new Lego Marvel Lego game has narrated by Stan Lee. It's like, people not narrating it, Jack Kirby. Yeah, because he's dead, you stupid fuck. Because we don't have a goddamn Lazarus pit to raise him from the dead so we can narrate this fucking Lego thing for you.
You think Jack Kirby would even do that?
No.
He'd just say, go screw off, I'm busy doing other stuff. Leave me alone.
Fucking drawing.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And he'd be drawing for one of the big two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before he died, when he was making shit for Image, no one gave a fuck.
No one talked about it at all. No.
No one fucking bought it. And Image was giving him work before he died and letting him keep all the money, and no one gave two flying fucks.
The internet, man.
Jesus Christ.
Great place to be. All right. We'll move on. But yes. Comics, their thing. Hellboy, 20 years old. Happy 20 years, Mike Mignola. You did good.
It's been 20 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. I literally feel like it was yesterday that somebody told me, oh, you got to see this new book. And I went into my comic book shop and bought the first issue, and I couldn't believe how amazing it was. I swear that was yesterday. That's just crazy to me. Also, 75 years ago, Superman donned his panties. They put out an animated short. It's a couple weeks old now, but it's pretty neat. They put in the Zack Snyder bits at the end, which kind of bugged me. And again, I didn't hate that movie as much as you did, but I kind of bugged me.
It just wrecked it.
Yeah.
I just didn't care for the whole thing.
Because I got kind of excited through some of it. Some of it I was like, yeah, dude, freaking Superman. That looks a lot like Christopher Reeves. And that looks like George Reeves. And I was getting all excited. And then he comes out in a kind of semi-black suit and he looks like, what's his name? And I'm like, ah, well, shit. I guess you've tied your wagon. You're pretty happy with that. This is your big 75th anniversary animation, so I should just get used to it. But
I mean, from the animation style and what they did with the style, I thought it was really, really cool.
Yeah.
I just thought it was rather. I wanted more of a story in the short as opposed to.
I see.
Just an homage. Yeah. But they had like the Tim style stuff, and they had.
Yeah, I mean, it was all cool. I mean, it was great that that they put that in there. But I was like, okay, let's have Superman throw that car from Action Comics, and then somebody runs by, and then that's the wipe to the new style. Somebody punches him in the face, he goes to the wall, and now he's in the Kirby style, and so on and so forth throughout the piece. I was kind of hoping it's something like that, that there was a story where the style would change to match the era, as opposed to, well, let's just wipe through all this stuff. That was the only thing that I had the biggest problem with.
It'd be nice if he saved more people in it or something.
He didn't kill Zod. He didn't kill Zod enough times.
No, he didn't. Let's see what else. Batman's going weekly. Few characters have been that strong to carry a weekly book, even if that character appears in four regular monthly titles. This according to majorspoilers.com. Wolverine, Superman, and Spider-Man are all over the place. Apparently, DC Comics thinks there's not enough Batman in our lives. The company has announced a new weekly Batman series. Steven, what's going on with that? Starts this spring?
Yeah, Batman Eternal. This is going to be an ongoing weekly series. Amazing Spider-Man did this for the longest time, where they did 3 weeks out of a month, you'd get a new Spider-Man title. And I think, to be honest, when you look at some of the people that are involved in it and some of the names that they've attached, it almost feels like they're cleaning out. They found a closet full of unused scripts, and they're like, what are we going to do with all this stuff? This is great. And they're just, well, let's create a new series and spread the love all around, because they got Paul Dini, and I think Bruce Timm is doing something with one of the bits. And it should be rather interesting, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, we already
have. Is it kind of almost like a weekly anthology. Word version of Black and White?
Yeah, kind of. But, you know, I'm
obviously not in Black and White.
I like
obviously
Black and White a lot. Did you not like that? I thought that was great.
No, it's great.
Yeah, I thought that was good. Something like that would be, I'd
we don't know
that.
Too much about through stories and everything, but, I mean, we do know that Red Robin is going to play a role, and kind of a big role in the series, as will Spoiler coming back will be in that. But otherwise, they haven't really said much about the series and whether it ties into the ongoing continuity of what's going on in all the other books, if there is such a thing as continuity between all the other books. But I mean, when you think about it, you're going to be buying, if you're a big Batman fan and all you do is buy the Batman titles, you're now going to buy, on average, 3 Batman titles a week. And that includes, you know, the Nightwing, the Robins, the Batwomans, all of that stuff.
It's about $15 a week.
So just for those 3 titles.
That's your WoW subscription in 1 week. So
yep.
Enjoy.
Yeah, believe me, I dump a crap ton of money on comics every month.
Yeah. Well, you're one of the 200,000.
Well, my dealer, and I say that, he jokes that I've put one of his kids through college. And as I calculated in my mind, he may not be joking.
My kids through college.
He may not be joking.
Wait, Kurtz, what were you going to say? You were about to ask him, would he still do it if something...
Would you be buying that many comics if it wasn't your job?
Oh, yeah.
You know, before I started Major Spoilers, I actually was buying that many comics before that. And since the website started, I've actually cut back on the amount of titles that I've bought over the years.
That's funny. That's a scene from The Simpsons where they're in the park or they're walking, and this guy goes, hot dogs, and Homer goes, ooh, I'll take 2. And Marge goes, are you following my husband around? And the guy goes, lady, he's putting my kids through college.
I remember that now. Classic scene. And then finally, Stephen, there's an article you put in here about why is it so easy for fans to make a Wonder Woman film?
Man, there are, if you go online, and I don't know how you guys feel about fan films, but I love watching them. There are some real turds out there, but there are some real gems. And over the last, I want to say maybe 6 months or so, I have seen like 3 separate fan-made trailers that capture the spirit, the essence, the energy, and the look of Wonder Woman. And they all are so fantastic, and yet we sit here and go, Warner Brothers, how come you guys haven't done anything with Wonder Woman? Oh, we just don't understand her. We can't figure her out, and we're dumb males. I don't understand. I just don't understand why the fan community can get behind it and create some really great-looking things, but Warner Brothers just can't get their finger on it.
There's been no confirmation that the Justice League film will have her in it, right?
Right. Well, I'm sure that's the assumption. There are rumors spinning around wildly through the intard webs that Wonder Woman may make an appearance in the Batman versus Superman movie.
Huh. That's interesting. I'm all for them figuring this out. We just, Autopilot, Tom and I just did the original Kathy Lee Crosby two-hour trailer thing.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
It's shite. Whatever. It was 73 or whatever. But Ricardo Montalban is the bad guy. It was just a riot. He was playing a Frenchman, which about killed me the whole time. There's a lot of things wrong with that show, but you keep seeing these stabs at it, and they kind of get it right with Linda Carter for a while, and then that's such a weird era. I don't know if that works today at all. Clearly it doesn't, because they can't even get a pilot out that anyone wants. So I don't know what the problem is with that character.
Well, let me ask you a question, okay? And let's just examine it here for a second.
All right.
Okay. If I ask you what's Spider-Man? Like, give me the important points of Spider-Man. All right, go ahead.
Okay, here's mine. He's young.
Yep.
He's nervous. He got bit by a spider, and he's feeling like he needs to do that stuff for good because his uncle
you have
Spider-Man analogy for puberty. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Right. So you have a young boy going through big changes in his life, becoming a man, right?
Yeah.
You have spider powers over puberty. You have the responsibility of great power, and you have that he's kind of flippant in defiance of all the problems that he has when he's Spider-Man. But when he comes, he can be Spider-Man, but when he takes his mask off, he's can't pay rent and he's worried about his sick aunt.
Sure.
There's a lot of problems. Okay.
Sure.
Batman is pretty simple too, right? He is fueled by revenge. It's a revenge fantasy. He wants to fix the world, the broken world, blah, blah, blah. Superman is a savior story. The Hulk, Jekyll and Hyde, our dark side. What's Wonder Woman? She's the girl.
Yeah. This is interesting because.
What's Wonder Woman?
She's Flash. She's there to save every one of us.
All right. Well, okay. This is a really good point because we don't have an age old wrote it on the cave wall story analog to compare her to, probably.
Her origin's very muddled, because people have redone it.
I mean, you've got Thor, right? I mean, he's a god that's come down to save the world. Well, Wonder Woman's a god to an extent.
Sort
of. Okay. That's here to save the world.
She's a god that's come, right. And it's so you could do a direct translation of Thor, just gender swap it, and instead of Asgard, it's Olympus,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or Themyscira, wherever she's from.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Some hidden hole in the middle of South America.
Yeah.
No one knows about.
Themyscira. Yeah. And then, so is she kind of Thor-ish in the sense that she is a person out of, like a fish out of water type story? So, in my opinion, the problem with Wonder Woman is not, I don't think anyone really understands who she is, but I think what it's going to take for there to be a Wonder Woman movie is we need our Robert Downey Jr. for mm-hmm. Wonder Woman, okay? Mm-hmm. And no one in the studio is going to have the balls to do that, right? So I can pick at least right off the top of my head five awesome choices for Wonder Woman's in the past, I don't know.
20 years even.
20 years.
Sure.
And we've all missed our shots, right? We've missed all of them, okay? And the really funny thing is that none of them are white women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because when I say Wonder Woman, I think Angela Bassett would have been a kick-ass woman.
She'd have been great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, actually, Catherine Zeta-Jones, I think, would have been a pretty awesome Wonder Woman.
Yeah, in her prime.
Even Aisha Tyler. But who was the chick from Firefly? Gina Torres?
Gina Torres.
Yeah, Gina Torres, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Torres would have been a fantastic Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, and considering she was made out of clay and is kind of an ideal and is kind of the product of and she's an Amazon. Amazons right. can be anything. It's really going to take an actress, but not just an actress, but a studio that is willing to go, you're going to decide what Wonder Woman is. I mean, it's just the same thing with Iron Man. Iron Man has a really muddled comic book history, a really shitty rogues gallery. But Favreau and Downey sat down and said, this is going to be Iron Man, and just went.
Yeah.
And until someone does that with Wonder Woman, it's going to be DC going, we just don't know how to translate a woman to the screen, and then cut to Marvel going, raccoon with a shotgun.
Yep. It's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. But it's really going to take – I mean – honestly, it's going to take an actress and a studio giving that actress the freedom to decide who Wonder Woman is. And if you're going to get it, you're going to get a director, and you're going to get a good director and a good actress in there, you could make a really great Wonder Woman movie happen.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen the two most recent fan films? The one where it's flashing back between her and the modern world and her back on Themyscira fighting one of the elder gods. I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
Giant thing. That one's really cool. And then there's another one where it's World War II setting where she's fighting Nazis and planes are raining down on the sky. And
yeah,
that's cool. A World War II era thing would be way cool.
How about the DC Nation shorts?
Yeah, you know, those are pretty good too. Where she's,
those are really interesting. Where she's like a beach chick. Yeah. Those are super interesting.
Yeah. I like her in all the animated stuff lately. She's been great. I thought she was good in that Doom thing. I just feel like I don't think it's a problem of them not figuring out what to do with her. I think it's a problem of them thinking not enough people are going to care and therefore not go. And it's not worth the investment. And it's all a bunch of, you know, old men in suits who are making that decision.
You know who would have made a great Wonder Woman that is is age and appropriate now is Jamie Alexander.
Yeah, I could see that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She'd have been a great Wonder Woman.
Yeah. For a long time, I was all on up in the Sandra Bullock camp for years because I thought she could have done it. She could have pulled it off, but I think we're past that. I don't know. Maybe not.
We are.
Maybe that's part of the problem. Robert Downey Jr. is, 52? Or something?
Well, he's going to be 50, and that's why he's saying, "How I can't keep doing this, guys. I'm going to be 55-year-old.
Yeah. He's got to go back to cocaine sometime. I mean, isn't that what they all do? They all drop back sometime.
That's real nice, Scott.
That's not...
that's terrible, I know. He is a modern-day miracle when it comes to Hollywood and how that stuff usually goes.
I say a prayer at night. I say a prayer after every Iron Man movie that he's really doing well.
Yeah, he seems to be. From all accounts, he seems to have
I don't watch Saturday Night Live because I can't stomach how many young actors and actresses went through that show, through that culture, and just got their lives wrecked.
Yeah, and there's some who may still be here but are kind of jacked up. Chevy Chase is pretty jacked up. There are others who are...
I think Chevy got out pretty good. I think Chevy hurt more people than he was affected.
That's
probably
true. Yeah. I feel like his bad go was turned outward instead of inward. Most of them kind of
like
turned
it's at least it's Hollywood, you know, legend or folklore that like Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill got hooked on drugs when they guest starred.
Yeah, that's true. Did you guys you ever watch any of the Robert Downey Jr. episodes of SNL back in the day when he was on that show?
Yeah, he and Anthony Michael Hall.
That was weird, man.
That's when he got hooked.
What's his name? Not Dennis. The other one, Randy Quaid, was on there.
Yeah,
That was weird.
He's in a weird spot too.
Yeah, he's another guy. He's up in Canada now, still hiding from whoever's out to get him. Anyway, let's get some. Let's rip through these little shorty stuff here real quick. Ant-Man gets bumped to July 1st, 2015. So that's sad if you were looking forward to that, but good probably because they'll take the time to, I guess, do Ant-Man right. I still have no idea what to expect there. Miracle Man is finally returning. Who the hell's Miracle Man? Why can't I place that?
Because it's a short-run series. Neil Gaiman and some others working on it, but it abruptly ended right at the of a big turning point or a big moment. 25 issues, I think, and so now finally we're going to see issue 26 coming out.
What's the space between when they quit and when they're bringing it back?
Like how long? 30 years.
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
30 years.
All right.
Miracle Man was originally a British comic book character that in the 80s, Alan Moore created Miracle Man as a comment on Marvel Man, which was, I think, like the British version of the Shazam family.
Oh, okay.
So Miracle Man became kind of like, takes the Shazam family and cram it into the Authority or the Boys, you know, and just say like, here's the underbelly side of what the Marvel family would be like.
Mm.
I don't remember how Gaiman was involved in it, but I thought it was Alan Moore.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. And then
they wrote a bunch of it.
Gaiman
wrote a bunch of it too. But then Eclipse Comics owned the rights to it for a while, and then there was a huge dispute in the 90s and 2000s about who owned it between McFarlane and Gaiman. They just fought and fought and fought and fought.
That's why I'm remembering something about that. There was some big fight between.
There hasn't been
a
new Miracle Man since the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking
of
80s.
It's a big deal for a lot of fans, yeah.
Speaking of 80s British comics, I did finally watch Dread.
Is good, right?
You know what? I really liked Dread a lot.
Super good.
And I kind of, part of me feels slightly guilty about it because... And I'm not sure
it's good.
Why. It's actually just so much freaking fun. And it's just ultra gory great. Like, I loved it.
It's super great.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
How awesome is it that that guy, Carl Urban, never took his helmet off?
I think it's
great. That was the best part.
Yeah.
That was the best part.
Just got that frown perfectly. I'm sure they just saw, like, watched him in Lord of the Rings or Star Trek and went, yeah, that guy can make a grimace. Let's pull him in here. Because it's perfect casting. He was great. I thought the girl was great. It was great. And I'm a big, huge fan of Die Hard movie trope where you're trapped in a building. I love that crap.
You need to watch the Korean movie. What is it called?
The Host? No.
The Block. The crap. I forget what it is.
Attack
the Block. Yeah.
Oh, I heard that's great.
That's not a Korean movie.
No, it's not Attack the Block.
Not Attack the Block. No. That's not
else.
About aliens. This is one where two police detectives have to go in and clear out the bad guy floor by floor in
what's that called?
This. I'll find it and send it to you.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. It's on this list of movies. I did see that other Korean movie that the Good, the Bad, and the Weird.
And the Weird, yeah.
Stupid name for a movie, but my gosh, that movie's fun. What a riot!
Which one?
Yeah,
the Good, the Bad, and the Weird. The Good, the Bad, the Weird is the exact title. It's on Netflix. Totally worth watching. Oh my god!
It is a total remake of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly,
but ridiculous. Like.
Yeah,
God, it's crazy. It's just has to be seen. It's so fun. I really enjoyed that movie. Let's see, Doc Savage Coming Back, written by Chris Robertson, and licensed by Dynamite Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Did Dynamite? Who owned it before? That doesn't sound right.
DC Comics had the license before this.
Yeah, Doc Savage. I was going to say that was a big two thing forever.
Mm-hmm. No,
wasn't it?
Doc Savage
was at DC Comics.
Doc
Savage, the Man of Bronze, is an old 1930s, 1940s.
Right. But previously, DC Comics had the license the comics of that as part of their first wave.
It's like Angela, dude. It's like that.
Yeah,
it's like somebody had
Doc
it.
Savage,
and then,
a great pulp character. Love him to death.
I'm stoked. That's great. That's something I'd like to get into. Editorial disagreements have caused J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman, or as I would prefer to say, black man, to walk off DC's Batwoman title. This happened a little while ago, but
yeah.
Caused a big stir about why and what and all that. Major Spoilers has a big write-up. You guys should read it. 9 lost Doctor Who episodes were found. That's all happened since we last met. Lots of really old, crappy-looking stuff, but there it is. Fans are probably happy about that. And isn't that a lot of... which Doctor is it? Which actor? It's
Patrick Troughton.
Troughton before
Second
Baker.
Doctor. Second Doctor.
Yeah, Second Doctor. So there's much rejoicing going on there. And we talked a bunch about this somewhere. Was it you?
Yeah, on the morning stream.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And we got deep into that. Peanuts get artist edition treatment from IDW Publishing.
That is exciting as hell.
Yeah, that's great, right?
Well, you know, Genie's buying up all the original art. No one could ever afford a piece, but to have a scan of it to where you could, it's essentially a photograph of the art to where it's almost like you're looking at the original art. That's just great.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That. And that's what's really great. These are big, oversized volumes that you
They're
just go in and you can see. Yeah, that you can go in and see this stuff. And it's fantastic. I've got a couple of these.
They interviewed her, by the way, on that movie, Dear Mr. Watterson.
Good.
She was really savvy about current day stuff, like talking about digital and Twitter and just, you know, word of mouth and what it means in comics and why it's different than it used to be and what Sparky used to do this or that. I thought, oh, they're going to roll her out and she's going to be from a different era. But man, she was sharp as a tack. It was really good. Her and who else was? Breathed was on there as well. And that was really interesting to hear him talk about really his chief competition at the time would have been Calvin and Hobbes, really.
Mm-hmm.
And, just to hear him talk about what that was, what that meant, and these letters that Watterson would send him with.
Yeah, they got into a huge fight.
Oh, it's crazy. But he has this huge respect. It's really, it's a good documentary. You guys are going to like it.
I'm going to love it.
Serenity returning to comics. That's good because I just read those 3 collections they did put out, and they were all good. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about that. So it's new Serenity stuff coming from Dark Horse, I guess.
Dark Horse Comics, yep.
Yeah. So that'll be good.
And the movie that I'm referring to, Scott, just so everyone knows, The Raid Redemption.
The Raid Redemption.
Yep.
Okay.
That's the one you need to go check out.
I'm in.
If you like Judge Dredd, you'll like this one.
All right. I like Dredd was great. I do not like Judge Dredd, but I like Dredd.
Okay.
Sylvester Stallone thing is garbage.
Oh, yeah.
I am the law.
All right. Time for books we're reading.
Wait a minute. Don't leave me here alone. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know.
All right. We made a commitment a couple months ago that we would all read Lock and Key. Specifically, what is it? Lock and Key Homecoming?
Welcome to Lovecraft. No, Welcome to Lovecraft.
That's it. Welcome to Lovecraft. Which at the time I didn't know what that meant, and I had not read any of this stuff. And you've been raving about Lock and Key for so long that I couldn't deny it any longer. So I got a question though: is this the starting point? Is this
is the starting point? The one where they're traveling back to Massachusetts, because their father was brutally murdered by a crazed psycho killer,
Sam.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Was it Sam?
I don't forget what his name.
Whatever
is.
Whatever it is,
it's pretty trippy. And then as the Lock children arrive to Lovecraft. The kids discover that there's something interesting about the house. They discover these keys, and these keys have the power to do different things. And there may or may not be a ghost living in the well house, and you may or may not be able to exit your body or take things in and out of your head with these keys. Mm-hmm. It's written by Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's son. Yeah. So if you can start to see a lot of the influence going in there. And the art, the fantastic art, is by Gabriel Rodriguez. And you really need to pay attention.
The inks are amazing. Just amazing.
And you need to pay attention to every single panel because there are things packed and hidden into that that tell you what's coming up in the house in future installments.
Yeah. He's got, I don't know what it is. It's not even my kind of style normally. Like it's not that it's cartoony or whatever. I'm into that, but there's something a little disjointed about some of the facial things he's doing, but there's something about the complete package there art-wise. It's just breathtaking. The detail, I guess. That's what it is. There's just so much going on in those panels. I had no idea what to expect, and I really liked it, and I'm in for more. So,
it's a good thing, too, because the series is coming to an end, or at least the Lock Children saga is coming to an end. They're going to be having some additional stories and sequel type things that are coming out in the future, but I don't think that they've announced any of that yet. But I know that that's what's in the works.
I think what I like about it the most is they're straddling these two. They've got one foot in this kind of childlike innocence story one foot in some pretty devious business.
Oh, and there are some, I mean, you kind of have to be warned. The art is really pretty, but there are some moments where it gets very, very graphic far as, you know, what's going on. The main antagonist is hitchhiking from California to Massachusetts or wherever. Maine, I'm sorry, Maine is where they're at. And kills a truck driver.
Yeah,
in the way, and it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, also after a bit of implied childhood exploitation is a nice way to put it on the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah, there. I mean it's got that's what I'm saying though. It's got this crazy. There's an innocence to the book, and a kind of wonderment. I don't want to say Harry Potter, but you know. There's a bunch of that on one side. On the other side, it's like, man, they're going dark on that last thing they did or this particular storyline or whatever. I really like it, and I'm going to keep going. So I'm back. I'm in for volume two or whatever it is.
At one point, a couple of years ago, Fox Television had picked up the rights to this first volume, or really to the entire series, to do a TV series on that. That fell through, although a lot of people have seen the pilot. And just adore it. I keep trying to get Chris Ryle over at IDW to send me one, but he won't do it. It's supposed to be really, really good. Now the word is that it may be turned into a movie, and that's what they're looking at. The other thing is that that I find interesting in the last couple of weeks, IDW Publishing has announced IDW, I think it's Entertainment, which is tasked with taking their properties. And they have a lot of properties, including Doctor Who and Transformers and some other stuff, but taking their properties, which Lock and Key is, and developing into television properties and television series.
Well, I think this would be better as a series. It reminds me of American Horror Story in some ways.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah, that kind of, you could serialize it into a single season, and then the next season is, you know, even a different group or a different time or whatever. You could do a lot in that same vein. It'd be nice to see somebody do that with it because I don't think a movie would do it justice.
Right.
It just seems cool, too compressed, I guess.
What's cool about this first volume, the Welcome to Lovecraft volume, is it's really standalone. You can read this and it's done and it tells the story from beginning, middle, and end, and you can just walk away from it there if you like. But then the story gets even more deep as the kids discover more keys in the house, the history of the house, what the house does to people, and what evil entities may or may not be trying to control the universe.
Right. And it's good.
It is really
spoil anything. Scott, you like it? You a fan?
I must have missed where we all, maybe I wasn't on the episode where we all agreed to read it because I didn't know to read it.
Oh, maybe not.
Yeah, I think that was the last episode you weren't there.
That might have been it, yeah. No, it's if you haven't, you should. It's good. It's really
I'm
good.
I'm going to now.
Mark was preaching its song pretty heavily, and you, Stephen, have been talking about it for years. So it's just a matter of.
People were just like, Stephen, you got to go check this out. And I was like, I don't know. It's not DC. It's not Marvel. It's a book I don't know.
Yeah.
And they're just like, just go read it. I'm like, oh. And as soon as I picked it up and opened the first page, I'm like, I'm sold on this thing.
Yeah.
And I've been riding this love train all the way to the end.
Yeah. It's really good. And it was, is it Cryptozoic has a card game, tradable card game
yes,
based on it?
Yes. I didn't play it at Nerdtacular. Yeah. Nicole and Mark did. Grab a copy and are trying to sit down and go through it.
I have it here somewhere. They gave me a free one for the event, and I don't know what I've done with it, but I'm sure when we get moved, I'll be able to pull it out and mess with it.
There you go.
It's really good. Now I'm more excited because I've read the damn thing. Let's see what else. Scott Kurtz, what are you reading?
I've been so busy with everything, I haven't read a goddamn thing.
You've read home insurance papers. There you go.
I did. On my reading list is this new Paul Pope book, Bow Boy. Mm. I'm really interested in that. Yeah. I'm a big Paul Pope fan.
Yeah. What's the story? What's the arc? What's the point?
Just that he likes doing the idea of kids superheroes. Mm. I don't know that Battling Boy is necessarily a kids book or an all ages book. But yeah, it's just Paul Pope is just so stylish and crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in reading it. And I fell behind on All New X-Men, assuming that it was like a temporary thing. Because it was about the X-Men getting pulled back in time, forward in time.
Oh, right. That old thing. We talked about that last time, too.
But I think they're keeping them here. Like, I think they're keeping the old X-Men in the future.
Oh, weird.
Wait. Like, it's still them and just didn't design new costumes for them.
But they're just, but what happened to the, I mean, the current guys are still here, though? So we got two
Cyclopses.
Yeah,
we got two and we got, I guess. Oh, I'm really curious.
That seems dangerous.
Yeah, it's just, you know, everything just kind of got mixed up where they had Avengers versus X-Men, and they combined Avengers and X-Men, and then the all-new X-Men showed up, and then the House of M got reversed, so the mutants all started coming back. And so I thought that All New X-Men was temporary, but I guess it kept going?
Well, I guess so. You're back in, though. You'll keep reading, right?
I got to catch up, yeah.
Okay. All right.
So next time I'll...
Yeah, let us know how convoluted that gets next time, because I'm curious.
I can't wait.
Two Cyclopses. I also read the entirety of that Lock and Key introductory volume, and it's awesome. And I'm really stoked to keep going. I mentioned that. I've also been reading a bunch when I've had time, and I've been reading the Wool series or the Silo series from Hugh Howley. This is this thing that showed up a few years ago on Amazon or on Kindle. It was like a Kindle self-published thing. And people freaked out, said it was amazing. A post-apocalyptic tale like you haven't read. And I thought, it's time I picked that up. So I got the Omnibus version, been reading through it. It's awesome. Oh my gosh, I love it.
Is it good?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's one of those cases. They've sold comic rights and movie rights, I want to say. And he also has some weird retainership thing that's kind of cool. Anyway, it's just nice to see a dude what wrote something, you know, during a few months or whatever, put up a short story and it took off and he was able to expand on it. I think that's even making it even more awesome to just kind of know he's sort of quote unquote one of us. But also I really am stoked for the comic adaptation. So I'm really happy that's happening in the movie and stuff. So anyway, I like it a lot. I think it's great. And I love the characters in there and I'm a sucker for anything post nuke, you know, desert, freaking lost out in the nowhere, zombies, whatever. I mean, I love all that crap. So this just totally scratches that itch for me. Let's see. I'm rereading Frontier and a whole bunch of old Mad magazines I unearthed while I was prepping for the move. Got a whole big box in there of like all my 80s issues. I used to buy them and collect them all and freaking loved it. And all my Mort Drucker collections. I just love that guy. He's going to die one day and I'm going to be real sad. Easily my biggest influence growing up artist-wise. Just that guy could do no wrong.
Jack Davis just died recently.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I used to love Jack Davis, too. Don Martin was the only guy I really didn't love. He was all right.
he had great sound effects.
Sure did. Sergio was good. I mean, there was a lot to love about all those guys, but Mort Drucker, man. He was the dude. So yeah, it's just been fun thumbing through those and reading, like, you know, the MASH parody and like old original, the original Star Trek, the motion picture parody I have in there, which is crazy. Anyway, also the Serenity books on Dark Horse, I've been reading those. They're real cheap on Amazon. I think I paid like $7 a piece. And those were great, good little fun reads. And it's fun to revisit those characters. And I can't wait for more now that we found out they're doing more. How about you, Steven? What are you doing?
Well, I finally finished reading the Batman Year Zero story arc, which is kind of cool. If you are familiar with the Detective Comics 27, the whole Red Hood getting pushed into the vat, which may or may not have turned into the Joker at some point down the road, this explores that time before Bruce Wayne became Batman, or as he was becoming Batman, and essentially dealing with the Red Hood gang. And of course, it all culminates with an explosion at the Acme Chemical Factory. So it's really good. It's Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo on the art. It's been very enjoyable over the last couple of weeks as I've caught up with that. And then, man, who would have thought from Archie Comics that they would do a serious zombie series?
Oh, I heard about that.
Afterlife with Archie is fantastic.
Weird.
Now, it doesn't go, I mean, we're only into the first issue, so I don't know if we're going to see, you know, people eating entrails or, you know, crazy stuff like we see in The Walking Dead or Crossed, but the art is by Francesco Francavilla, who is a fantastic artist. His noir style of art fits perfectly with this series. They don't follow model. They don't follow the Archie model. So don't think mm-hmm. that you're just going to open it up and it's all going to be, you know, happy smiley faces. This is a serious title. It's got some very serious, scary moments in it. And it is an ongoing series for now of what happens when zombies invade Riverdale. It's great.
All right.
You guys really pick it up. Just pick this book up. Just if you do one thing this week, Scott, in addition to getting ready to move,
yeah,
just pick up and read Afterlife with Archie. I know you've got all this free time.
Sure.
It is worth the read.
TV stuff's all packed up, so I got to do something to entertain myself. I'll pick it up. I was really curious about it. I just thought it'd be all parody, you know?
Oh, you know, this is not parody.
That's
it
weird.
Is not. They approach this in a serious way, and it is freaking awesome.
I love that Archie is still, I just love that it's still a thing and that you can
see. It's so popular.
It's crazy to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it, though. I love that that's a thing. Let's keep that a thing. And I love that it went serious on that. That's almost a better parody.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That they took really it good. Serious. Really interesting. All right, cool. Well, you've had some busy reading time. Let's get an email in real quick. Got one here from Glenn. Says, hello, Scott, Stephen, and Mark. I would like to recommend the Vertigo series Scalped, written by Jason Aaron and illustrated by R.M. Guerra. It is a short series at 60 issues long and one of my favorite comic series of all time. It is a crime drama with a neo-Western aesthetic similar to shows like Justified and Breaking Bad. I don't know if I'd call Breaking Bad a pseudo-Western, but whatever. I encourage all of you to give it a shot and read it. Love the show. Glenn, I am not familiar with that series at all.
From what
I've
I remember,
heard of it.
It takes place on one of the tribal lands and investigation that has to go on there. That's my 30,000-foot recollection of the book. I'm interested in it because I do know that it from Vertigo, it was like, getting a lot of traction when it was running.
Yeah, it's a Vertigo book, and I think it takes place in modern time, right? On a casino?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It deals with like that Longmire tribal law type stuff.
Oh, yes. I like Longmire a lot. So
I do too.
Yeah. It feels like that show feels like a... I don't know how to explain it. It's weirdly...
It's not a comic recommendation, but you know what I've started watching that I really dig?
What's that?
It's scratching my David E. Kelly itch that is gone since Boston Legal. Two shows, when I watch them back-to-back, completely replaces Boston Legal.
Weird.
If I watch The Blacklist and then watch an episode of The Good Wife, I'm covered. It's perfect. I'm really digging The Good Wife.
I've heard that's great.
Yeah, you can watch if you have Amazon Prime.
I do.
I didn't realize this, but if you have Amazon Prime, you get a free like second Netflix.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Really? Oh yeah. That's been a thing for a bit now, and their selection's not quite there, but there's also a lot of stuff there you can't get on Netflix and
like The Good Wife.
Yeah. Plus, if you're doing Prime, it's like a no brainer.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, dude. I'm into that. That's great. I should watch that because that's one we keep thinking we're gonna. Purge on it? No, gorge on it.
Gorge on it. You'll like it.
I don't want to purge on it.
You'll binge it.
excellent. Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, ends the show. By the way, if you want to submit your own email, you can comicdorks@gmail.com. Happy to read them on the show. That would be great. things are a little bit nuts for the next few weeks. Got a big move. Then I'm off to BlizzCon. Then I'm back. And then hopefully things simmer down until I have to go to Phoenix and perform a wedding for the first time, which totally freaks me out.
Oh.
So, yeah, there you have it. Anything you guys got going on, Scott? What's going on in the world of PvP? Anything you want to pimp, let people know about, and so on?
Not just yet. We have a big thing that's going to go down this fall in the next month, but until it's ready to go, I want to talk about it.
Ooh, I'm excited about it here. All right.
I'll just tease.
We call that pulling a Johnson around here. That's very nice. Stephen McSchleicher III. What about your world?
There's a big crisis thing coming up that hopefully will be resolved in February. But I'm not going to say anything maybe until next Nerdtacular.
Oh, gosh.
But it's something that is building that I'm hoping pays off.
Okay.
But in the meantime, if you like to dress up in costume, we have a little costume contest going on.
Oh, yeah.
Seventh year in a row that we've been doing this. All you have to do is dress up, take some pictures of yourself and a picture of yourself out of your costume so that we know that it's you.
Yeah.
Send it in by October 31st, and you could win an iPad mini.
Mm. What?
The top prize this year. Yeah. Dude, this is like the third
serious.
Year in a row we've given this thing given this away. So.
Yeah, they're serious about all this stuff. It's awesome. I love the yearly contest. It's always good, always great entries. And yeah, do it. Participate. Majorspoilers.com.
Yep.
Oh gosh, what else? I feel like I'm forgetting something important, and I don't know why I feel that way. But I'm excited about. I like winter and I like fall because I read a lot of comics, so I'm excited about that. I hope you guys out there are as well. You can find us at comicdorks.com on the website. You can email us comicdorks@gmail.com. We have a T-shirt up on /loot.com, so you can check that out as well. On Twitter, you can find us at comicdorks. Scott is at PvP Online. I'm at Scott Johnson. Steven is at Major Spoilers, and Mark, who we hope is feeling better, is at The Wood Whisperer, or Wood Whisperer on Twitter. More great shows just like this at frogpants.com. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Steven, and for Scott. We'll see you next time.
Visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.